Well, I'm going to get right to it. As a member of this church, one of my questions has always been, why aren't there more black people here? Especially in a city that has a large black population. And the other question that I have asked is, have there ever been any black people here, or very many black people here? And someone once jokingly responded to me, well, yes, but never more than one or two at a time. There is nothing in the history of our church which in any way identifies any black people as being a part of this society. It was within this context and as part of my studies in divinity school that I sought to find out more about the historical involvement of black people in the life of this congregation. I also tried to find out the extent to which this congregation made itself known in a way that positively impacted on the black community in this city, which is so near and yet so far. But my focus today will be on the people. To do this, I spent many hours in the church archives here and at the Schenectady County Historical Society. I went through files, newspaper articles, census reports, annual reports, meeting minutes, newsletters, orders of service. And I also spoke with many people, and some of you here today are people that I spoke with. Current and former members, black and white, and their families. And I'm going to share some of the stories that I uncovered with you today so that you will know that there were black people here, aside from me and Trish. And Rosie, I'm sorry. And we have new people too, I'm pointing you out, I'm sorry. Walter and Audrey Harvey. I don't know if any of you know that name, those names. They grew up in the African Methodist Episcopal Church, but began attending what their family called the Unitarian Church and what their friends called the White People Church. They started attending sometime in the 1950s. That long ago. And they signed the book on September 12, 1954. And until they separated in the late 1960s, they attended this church along with their three children. Audrey Harvey's grandmother was considered help at Union College. And she worked there greeting people at the door of the president's office. And while there, she became aware of this church through the people she encountered working there. And she suggested that Audrey's family attend. Now Audrey, she served as the acting director of the Schenectady Community Action Program, briefly in 1968, but she had been its deputy director since its founding. She was also an officer with the Schenectady branch of the National Association for the Branch of Colored People, a member of the Schenectady County Commission on Human Rights, and the City Community Development Committee. In 1968, Audrey brought to the attention of the church the need for a legal aid society in Schenectady. And in 1969, she and fellow church members, and forgive me if I don't do justice to his name, John Van Schoit, yes, and Freeman Robinson became founding members of the Legal Aid Society in Schenectady. At the request of a FUS member, who was the general manager of a local television station between the years of 1964 and 1968, she was the host of a show called Black Telethon, which was featured in the national publication Ebony. She addressed issues there around race. At church, she served as the chairperson of the council. I'm having a little technical difficulties here, but. At church, she served as the chairperson of the council, a unit within the church which provided adult programming for the congregation. However, she stopped attending in 1969. Her husband Walter's primary involvement in FUS was as a religious educator. And he was elected to serve on the Religious Education Council in 1971. And as one former member said, he was one of the best teachers I ever saw anywhere in my educational career. And Hunter Curran, who you heard about today, he told me that his children remembered him very, very fondly. Although he was loved and respected as a religious educator, he was not typically in the services, and it was not clear if he was even comfortable being in the services. But he was a teacher at Shenandoah, and he received a Lifetime Achievement Award there in 1973. He believed in children and in developing them and was known for being willing to work with what were considered problem students in the district, and he got great results. As late as 1989, he led the summer arts program at the day camp run by the Hamilton Hill Arts Center. He died in 1991, and his memorial service was held right here that year. Freeman Robinson, whose name you heard me mention, was a teacher at a correctional facility in Coxsackie, New York. He was considered an outspoken but respected member of the church. In 1967, the Social Concerns Committee, SCC, which was the precursor to our Social Action Council today, considered the issue of Black power as well as local problems such as housing, and decided to recommend the support of something called Better Neighborhoods, Inc., or BNI. Does anyone remember that organization here? Okay. BNI was a nonprofit volunteer corporation dedicated to the purchase and renovation of substandard housing in the area that we now know as Hamilton Hill. And Freeman worked along with other members to renovate some of those homes. He was considered at the forefront of the Black Power movement in Schenectady, and as I said a few moments ago, he was one of the founding members of the Legal Aid Society in Schenectady in 1969. In addition to the work that he did with the Legal Aid Society, he was also the founder and chairman of the Schenectady Action Committee, a local organization aimed at empowering Black people in the Schenectady area. In 1968, FUS, through the SCC, provided money for rent and repairs to the space used by that organization so that they could do their work. From the 1982 to 1983 church year until he eventually resigned from the post in 1994 or 95, he was this congregation's delegate to the Schenectady Inner City Mission. Now, I know most of you know what that one is, right? His wife, Sandra, would also share in this role with him. What was close to Freeman's heart, so it was told to me, was the food pantry run by Sikkim. And as one member recalled, the first Sunday of every month, he would stand in the back of this church and make an impassioned plea for members of the congregation to donate money to buy food for the needy people of Schenectady. Bob Watts worked for the state of New York. He was a member of the SCC, and through it, in 1972, raised money to help the Carver Community Center, some of you know that one, right? Schenectady people, pay off some of its financial obligations. He was an advocate for financial support of the Black Action Council and Black and White Action, two organizations at the center of the empowerment controversy within this denomination. And if you take a class on UU history, you'll learn more about that. It's not clear when Bob began his involvement with Carver, but the relationship of this church to Carver went back at least to 1959, when Walter Harvey worked there along with the wife of the then minister, Reverend Bill Gold, where they were both staff at the summer camp that Carver ran. Bob would eventually become president of the board of directors of Carver Community Health Center, and after leaving his position as chief health planner for the New York State Department of Health in 1994, he would lead Carver's transition to a freestanding health organization. I couldn't really find out when he ended his relationship with this church, though. Religious liberalism was nothing new for James and Margaret Cunningham. Do any of you know those names? A few people do, yeah. Before attending FUS, they briefly attended the First Unitarian Universalist Society in Albany. And before that, they live in Mount Edgecumbe, Alaska. There, Dr. Cunningham fulfilled his military service during the Korean War with the Public Health Service as a tuberculosis specialist. And some of the indigenous people living in Alaska today feel that they owe their lives to him for the work that he did there. In 1955, Dr. Cunningham served as the first chairperson of the Sitka Mount Edgecumbe Unitarian Fellowship, of which the Cunninghams were founding members. It was formally accepted into the membership of the American Unitarian Association in February of 1956. In addition to being a medical doctor, Dr. Cunningham was trained as a psychiatrist, and in 1964, he became the first Black psychiatrist to practice in the city of Schenectady. He was an active member of the NAACP and a founding member of the local Friends of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, or what was referred to at the time, SNCC. Okay. Margaret Cunningham would found Schenectady's Hamilton Hill Arts Center in the neighborhood for the same name in 1968, and their daughter, Mickey, would eventually become its executive director. And groups within this church have periodically given to the Hamilton Hill Arts Center, and that has been a safe haven for children in the community for many years, and not just children, as a matter of fact. Although they attended the church occasionally in later years, the Cunninghams appear to have stopped being active sometime before the 1980s. Their daughter Mickey would become active in the church in the 1980s when the eldest of her children was a teenager. She began working with the youth group and was elected to the Religious Education Council during the 1980 to 81 church year. She and her husband, Butch, would eventually become the teachers of the senior youth group, which provided programming for youths in grades 10 through 12, and it would experience significant growth under their leadership. She would eventually hold the title of youth coordinator. And in 1988, her husband, Butch, would begin the jazz concert series at the church called A Place for Jazz. That was then, but what about now? The location of this church has helped to maintain a real separation from the part of the city where most of the Black people here live. The city is segregated, that's clear. Although it is becoming less so, but the lack of engagement because of this segregation has probably helped to fuel certain stereotypes. And this has probably resulted in the lack of participation of Black people in this church. Some have suggested that more Black people do not worship here because they would not be comfortable in the church because of their beliefs or because of differences in class or education. But the reality is that none of those reasons are limited to Black people. But even if they were, Black people are no more homogeneous than white people. I cannot speak for the Harveys, Freeman, Bob, the Cunninghams, or any of the others, and I am sure that there were others who I was not able to name or identify. But I can speak for myself. The path here is one of intention for most people, and it was probably one of intention for many of you. But whether or not we choose to stay is also a path of intention. How welcome or uncomfortable those who walk through our doors feel will determine that. As a response to the discriminatory treatment experienced by members of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer community, in 1987, the UUA, or the Unitarian Universalist Association, for those of you who are not familiar, commissioned the Common Vision Planning Committee to research the problem. They came back with troubling findings, but they also came back with a recommendation for the creation of something called the Welcoming Congregation Program. There is an application process which includes a series of required commitments and action steps, which, if completed, will result in the congregation becoming identified as a welcoming congregation. And as many of you know, we are one. The existence of this program demonstrates the potential for the UUA and its member congregations to create an analogous program and action plan to address the lack of participation of Black people as well. I do not believe that the problem is exclusively our problem, and it should not be left to individual congregations like ours to solve. Whether or not this will happen is another issue. Blogger Kim Hampton suggests that Unitarian Universalists have no sense of urgency about race issues in their congregations and elsewhere because there are not enough members whose family members have been adversely impacted by discriminatory treatment. In 1990, FUS became the second congregation in the UUA to be certified as a welcoming congregation. An individual who served on the committee which spearheaded this effort credited its success to the fact that many of the people on the committee and in the congregation had connections to the LGBTQ community because their children were members of it. What happened? How did we get to the point where no one remembers these people or the significant work that they did in the city of Schenectady or in this church? I don't think this is an uncommon phenomenon, as I said before. When I spoke of James Cunningham earlier and how the indigenous people he encountered in Alaska felt gratitude for the health care he provided, what I did not tell you was that the members of the fellowship which he founded had no idea who he was until I told them. I have one clue about what might have happened here and there. We remember the people with whom we have connections. I said that word before. Whether they are our family or our friends, those are the people we tell the stories about, the people we have connections to. And the people we tell those stories to tell them to others. I am wondering if not enough people told the stories about Audrey and Walter, Bob, Freeman, James, and Margaret because very few people were really connected to them. In fact, some people that I spoke to didn't even know that they were here and they attended church at the same time. Some of the white people that I spoke with who did have genuine connections to some of these individuals knew what some of their challenges here were. And I'm not going to go into that now, but I will say that only by truly knowing someone can you understand what their struggles are, and only then can you make a difference. Another thing I wonder is perhaps they were not even seen. What has surprised me in all the research that I did was I found out that we held this church, members of this church, hold Charles Steinmetz in high esteem. But he is someone who never really was clearly a Unitarian. He was supportive of this congregation. But James and Margaret Cunningham were not only members here. Among UU scholars, they are considered trailblazers in the denomination, and they are virtually unknown except to a few. So I have to say, how many people really knew them? How many people saw them? I sometimes wonder how many people see me. This past year or so, I've been engaged in a lot of work and activities that have taken me elsewhere on many Sundays, but I have been attending this church regularly since 2010. And until recently, one of the two black people who regularly attended. But every once in a while, there will be someone whose face I recognize who will ask me, "What brought you to visit us today?" There are mixed emotions with that. I'm happy that they reached out, but a little disheartened that they thought I didn't really belong. Today you have heard the stories of some people who belonged here. Remember them and tell their stories. 2 years ago, Reverend Mark Morrison Reed spoke at our annual joint service. One of the things he spoke about was connections, real connections, and how important they were in overcoming racial divides, even within our congregations. I do not have the solution which would get us to inclusion. We have to do that together. But what we need to do is already happening. We are looking at who we are. We are engaging in dialogue. We are trying to learn as much as we can. And part of that involves reclaiming all of our history. Once we do that, we can find out where to go from there. And our faith is one which calls us to share our similarities and differences as we work to heal the world. Our differences are what make us beautiful and stand as a beacon of hope for the world we are not yet but can become. We are not only our grandmother's prayers and our grandfather's dreamings. We can be the fulfillment and realization of our own. Make it so. Amen and blessed be.